Hey there, party people. This is Sarpcast, and we're here for episode number 4. As always, I'm your host, Revolver, the six shooter of love. And with me today is my very special guest, the avatar of Kohania himself, in the flesh, it's James.
Hey, what's going on?
Glad to have you with us here. James is the FM of the Kohanians, and he's the GM of their soul plot, The Most Dangerous Game. He plays on the Seer Station and the Horizon's Key additionally. Well, it's good to have you on the show. You want to say a few more words about yourself?
I'm happy to have gotten this opportunity. It was something that when Revolver first put it up, I was really interested.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. This week we'll be talking about magic. Woo! And the Kohanians, of course. That's why we've got James here. This is the show that you guys have all been waiting for. Let me tell you, the kid gloves are off, and Sarpcast is in full swing. First up on the show, as always, we've got current events, new news, and the newest news is that it's been a pretty slow news week. The Abwerans have joined the Galactic community and starting their own interstellar news network, so if you're interested in that, you should go check out Abweran News. The site's been going on good for a week. It's just been people doing their plots. Kai started up his quick plot idea, the KMS Chaos, which is about small ships running through the Mishu blockade. NMX war is still going on. He asked for people to come if you just want to play a small ship for a really small plot, make a couple of posts. He's promised in-character prizes, so that might be interesting. And that's about it for news. Moving on to our discussion topics for the week. James is here, of course, and he's been with the site for something like 5 or 6 years?
Something like that, yeah.
He's here to tell us some of the history of SARP, how prevalent magic used to be, what its current niche in the universe is. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I have a bad memory, first of all, so I had to do a lot of searching, Googling and stuff, going back to the days of bloodycatgirl.com, back when the site was first started.
That's what the site's original name was?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
man.
The web address.
I'm going to definitely have to ask Wes about that next show. Bloodycatgirl.com. Yeah. Oh, man. All right, continue.
So I had to do a lot of Googling and things, and actually I didn't find a whole lot. So that's another thing you'll have to ask Wes about, is some of those old board posts and
yeah, talking
whatnot.
About the history of SARP in general is definitely something that we've got on the list of things to talk about next week.
Yeah. But from what I was able to find out, a lot of big name characters had some ties to magic back then. Actually, Hanako, Yui's, whatever you want to consider her, slave, pet, however, you know, she has a lot of hats she can wear.
Or gimp masks.
Or, well, yeah, there is always that. But I guess that she used to be an elf and then was switched into a Nico body shortly after she was claimed. And actually, for a while, she was the most powerful magic user on the site.
Uh-huh.
In the story. So, you know, she, I think in one of her old posts, she actually like lit a candle or a cigarette with her thumb. It was pretty cool.
And this was when she was still an elf, or is this after she became an echo?
After
she became an echo, okay.
Yeah, because magic used to be run by the Pantheon system, which was the trans-universal
network of computers that took care of everything, right?
Right. And to keep it from going Skynet, it wasn't just computers. It was half computer, half biological being.
So people in tubes?
That's how I always saw it. But and actually, I don't really know Yui's family tree, but Irem, I believe it, one of her daughters, it used to be in charge of Pantheon. And it was, those were good times. But you'll have to ask, that's another thing to ask Wes about, was Irem's weapon choice, we'll say.
All
That's
right.
what made me want to join the site, was Irem's weapon choice.
All right, I'm writing that down right now as something to ask about because I have no clue.
I won't ruin the surprise.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
But as time went by and Wes started getting more people and more, I guess, more direct fans of the sci-fi universe, started phasing out Pantheon and
So in the day in these days that you're talking about, like how big was the site? Like how many people were are we talking about here?
I think when I first joined, it was probably, I would say, less than 50, probably even less than 25 real, their everyday players. I mean, it was real small, but everyone was on one ship, the YSS Yui. And I kind of wish that days could go back to that, but that's personal opinion. But as I was saying, as we got more people coming in who were more devoted to the sci-fi aspect of it, the magic through Pantheon kind of got phased out. Because it was a difficult system to work with. It was, you paid a certain amount to get certain levels of Pantheon magic access.
Like paid KS.
Yeah. But since really there was no pay scales or anything at that time, anyone could say, well, I have 70 billion KS. And so it kind of, that was another factor that I think phased it out.
That's kind
But
of like how things are these days. Like, I know a lot of people don't actually update their. You know how much they have, unless something happens, and something like really big happens, or they want to get, characters updated for plot audits or commissions or whatever.
right.
It's kind of a system that it's something that's really interesting for new players, but after you've been with the site for a while, it's less important because if as long as you get involved with things, because if you're involved with things and it's like, oh, well, I want to, do this, well, it doesn't matter how much KS you have.
Right. So
But
right
that's interesting.
now,
So you spent KS to gain levels of spells, basically.
and I don't think, like I said, I don't remember really well. I think the system was set up with five levels, and the highest a civilian could get is level four. Hanako was the only level five. Because
Not Yui wasn't five also?
I don't remember. I don't remember talking to Wes about Yui having magic. I
Oh,
just
okay.
knew that Hanako, being an elf, had magic because it's on the site. The NH3 is the elf, and it was created by Nugen to augment the elf's natural magic using ability.
Gotcha.
But right now, these days, pretty much anything like that has been pushed to the wayside. I know Fred for a while, I think he still does. I think, oh, I can't remember. Fred's gonna hate me because I can't remember the name of his character that runs the Miharu.
Katari?
Yeah, Katori had psionic abilities, but basically that's the only one in a major plot that has anything magic-y.
Remaining.
Right.
Gotcha. So it was just this, more players coming into the sci-fi aspect that kind of killed the magic.
I think so. Yeah, and more of a, with Vesper and some of the other more proving scientific minds who can come in and say, well, no, that doesn't work because of this theory and that law and this math, that it started to become one of those well, since we can't really explain it in terms of current science and math, probably wouldn't be a good thing to hold on to.
So back then, did the tech forum exist in the same way that it does today, where people would submit things and it would have to go through a mod and approval process?
To some degree, yeah. It wasn't like it is now. It was just a posting basic information. This is how tall it is. This is how long it is. This is how wide it is. This is how many crew can be on it. And then describing its main weapons. We didn't really go into armor or systems that were inside of it. It was just a, this is what it looks like, so we can get it out there in a plot.
So, well, what I was wondering is if it was like that kind of thing that that caused it, like the tech forum that caused the decline of magic.
I don't want to blame it entirely on that, but I think I would say it's probably like 51%. Yeah.
Well, I mean, be as harsh as you want. This is the SARP cast where people can say whatever the heck they want to say.
I still stick with it. I don't blame it entirely on a forum where you have to get everything approved. I think that that's good for some things, but for other things, I think it should be new tech. I don't think that there should be a approval process for setting, because what may work for the Yimations doesn't work for the Naplezlians.
I disagree with you, but I mean, I understand where you're coming from.
I think big setting things, yeah, but things like a magic system, I would like to see it go back to the way it used to be, with it being if you can explain the basics of it, then it's fine. But having to go into, okay, you put your fingers in this place and you say these words, and I think that that's something that should be left up to a culture, for instance, the Kohanians.
Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about the Kohanian magic and how it works, how it exists today?
Well, I do. Yes, actually, I would love to do that, Revolver.
Well, please tell us, James.
The main thing is, though, I'll be perfectly honest to all of the people listening and to you. I really have never nailed it down to a specific, this is how it works. Because when you, the main thing was, I ever since Pantheon have been afraid of systems like that, where you tell, this is how it works. Because then everyone goes, okay, well, this is how we're going to make it not work. And for the Kohanians, whose culture is based around that, and because they're still very much a culture who believes in the mystical and things like that, that if you negate that, which was discussed between Wes and I back when I was first creating the Kohanians, that without their magic at that time, they're basically just people flinging swords and firing crossbows.
There
And
you go.
against a pan not Pantheon, a power armor, yeah, that's going to be really effective and they're going to be slaughtered.
Well, okay, let me put it this way. Like, let's say I want to create a Kohanian character that can use magic. Like, what's my limits? What can I do with this magic? Like, what is the magic?
Well, the magic that I have right now is split up into different schools. Which is the when a Kohanian is growing up during their time in school, which is basically they go to the temple closest to their house or village, and they learn the basics of being a Kohanian. And during that time, one of the classes that they're taught in is to find their school of magic, be it summoning or ritual magic or the casting from like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, where you have a spell, you say specific words, and it happens. But I also was shown the show Avatar: The Last Airbender, and I really love that concept where you add magical force to your martial arts. And so that's another school of it. And then past that, you can either just have that as like a basic knowledge where you would just be able to do small things like Scott's character, Swift River, in The Most Dangerous Game, I really love because his is just like a basic thing, basic summoning knowledge, but his summoning is only for this wolf companion that he has. And so I love the fact that at the time, I did not give him a whole lot of information. I just said, these are the different schools of magic. These are the different classes, you know, fire, earth, water, nature. And he took nature and then just was like, okay, well, I don't want to go summoning dragons and things like that. I just want to summon one thing, and it's just a companion for him.
So is that something? Are you touching your mic? I can't hear me through your speakers again. So is that how you'd rather players go about it then? Is you know, say this is what I'd like my character to be able to do when they submit their character?
I would, for especially for Gohanian characters, since basically that's all I have say over.
Well, I mean, these are the characters that can use magic still in the setting.
Right. I would like to see them go, well, this is what I'd like to do. And then my response would be, well, how long has your character been studying?
Oh, then you'd have a discussion with them on based on their character concept and everything.
Right. Because I, as you've probably seen from the few characters that I've done, I've looked over because there's so few Kohanians out there. I don't like to say, well, no, this isn't right, this isn't right, this isn't right. I like to say, well, this is a good concept, but I example of this was a guy that we used to have named Michael Brazil, or Brazil, I don't know how to say his last name, who wanted to create a mercenary named Bloodpaw. And he wanted his character to be the most badass guy out there. You
A
know, he's.
popular character concept for new players.
Yeah. And he wanted to have the his Kohanian wolf, his black fur is dyed red. Insert in a specific pattern. Well, I had to say that's a great concept because he had art that he wanted to do this character off of. And I looked at the art and I'm, wow, that is a really cool looking character. But at the time, Kohanians looked at tattoos, piercings, and things like that, other than the warrior clan with piercings, as being you're disrespecting the body the gods gave you.
All right, that makes sense.
So I said, I love the concept and I love the art. I love that character design. But Kohanians look down on your on tattoos and piercings and things, especially because a wolf is part of the now it used to be the Kialu, now it's the Guayaquil clan, who are usually monks. So they have a very specific this is how things need to be if you're going to follow our rules. And after that conversation, he said, well, what if they he ran away from his clan, turned his back on his clan?
He was a lone wolf.
Basically, yes, if both figuratively and literally. And I said, you know, that is a great way of getting your idea to stay there and, you know, honoring my saying, this is how the culture is. So I don't know. That's where I would like to see is I would like to see more people creating Kohanians, you know, filling out the character creation sheet, and then saying, here's what I would like to do. What do you think? So I can get start talking with the people and saying, okay, you know, I like to read the things that people come up with, because a lot of the times when that happens, especially with the Kohanians, I get a lot of moments of, huh, I never thought about doing that.
Well, it's definitely something that's been really interesting that I've seen on the side of the Aromaquanne in a lot of us that started right at the beginning didn't have a lot of wiki articles to work off of, and so Kokuten pretty much wrote every religious article for them, and we've had a lot of input on the on like the flora and fauna, the different planets, and this, and just the three planets that they have, and the articles are getting really fleshed out. So I really see where you're coming from on the fact that having players do, you know, participate in that sort of way is definitely something that's fun and interesting to see.
Right.
And, you know, for the listeners out there, you know, if you're interested in doing that kind of stuff, the Kohanians still can use that. And since we're talking about them, and this is our second topic of conversation, do you want to get on to the interview on the Kohanian portion?
Sure, we can do that, yeah.
All right. Just got a couple of questions here that I'd like to go through. First off, why don't you tell us about the Kohanians and who they are and what makes them such a unique player race on the site?
Well, to my knowledge, other than maybe the Fodians, shout out to Yang Fan there.
There you go.
I do believe that the Kohanians are the only, we'll say, anthropomorphic animal race out there. So that's definitely something that makes them unique.
You've got the Azorians, aren't they? They sort of the same thing.
That's true. I forgot about the Azorians, and I apologize to
Faye.
Yeah, I was gonna say Faye. I knew I started with an F. I was narrowing it down between Faye and Fiona. I apologize once again to Faye for forgetting that he was the FM of the Azorians.
Don't worry about it.
And also, I think that probably they're, and I say this lightly, I believe that they're probably one of probably the top three most culturally driven races behind maybe the Yamataeans and the whatever it was that you just said, the Irumaquane.
The Irumaquane, yeah.
I think that out of those three, you know, one probably, I don't know which way they would go, but I think that the Kohanians are up there culturally driven. Also, there's, just throwing it out there, is the fact that they're at this point a low-tech race.
What do you mean when you say that they're culturally driven? I can hear you through the speaker again.
I'm sorry, I don't know how to fix it, but
what do you mean when you say that they're a culturally driven race? Because as far as I'm aware, the Kohanians have fairly little written on their culture, as opposed to, say, the Irumaquane we were just talking about. And the Yamataeans don't really have a lot of culture written either. Most of the time it's just, hey, look at this stuff from Japan or, you know, Japanese culture, and that's how it is. So, like, what do you mean when you say culturally driven?
Well, like I was saying with the character Bloodpaw, is the fact that, you know, the Kohanians have this very specific set of, this is how you are to be acting, and this is how it is.
But how is that different than say, the Neplezlians? I mean, they've, as much as any of these other races, they've got, I mean, how is that different than pretty much any race? Like, every race is driven by their culture.
Well, what I mean is, for instance, like, the Yamataeans, like you said, oh, it's not a whole lot written, it's just, look at this stuff from Japan. At the same time, the way they act in battle and in dealing with other races is very, to them, the way that they are acting, you know, is the way that they have been dictated. An example.
But how is that, and then, like I said, like, how is that different than, say, the Neplezlians? I mean, their culture is man and awesome, but, I mean, that's still something that drives them in what they do. I mean, how is that different than any other race is what I'm at. Like, give me an example of something that's not culturally like a race that's not culturally driven, I think is what I'm asking here.
Well, I guess you're right. I didn't look at it from that perspective. I looked at it as being that the Kohanians act a specific way no matter what Neplezlia or Yamatai believes it should act. Rather than the Neplezlians, my character on Cirrus, Deacon, acted a specific way, and one of the Neplezlians says, hey, you're a Neplezlian soldier, you don't act that way. And I said, well, my character was, I act the way that I have been raised to act. Even though I am a Neplezlian soldier, I'm not going to give up what my culture says that I should be doing.
Yeah, but that doesn't really sound different than any character from any faction. I mean, if, you know, if you're a Yamataian in a an independent plot or whatever, and you still follow your Yamataian culture, or if you're a free spacer in a Neplazlian plot, or, you know, it doesn't seem, I just don't see where there's a distinction that makes, you know, one of those different than any of the other ones.
I guess you're right. I don't know how to put into words what it is that I'm thinking. I guess that was just a bad choice of words.
Maybe. All right, the Kahanians are unique in some respects to their culture. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
I don't know. I mean, I think we've pretty much covered everything that I was going to say about it.
Well, you want to talk a little bit more about how they're divided? I mean, not every Kahanian looks like every other Kahanian. You want to talk a little bit about the different cultures and clades and whatnot?
Well, sure. Like you mentioned, the Kahanians are split into specific clans, mostly by their, I guess you would call it, like, earth standards. It's the canines, the felines, and then I knew I wanted to create four, but I couldn't think of another two, so I made, like, horses, bulls, bighorn sheep, and then Missing helped me out in one of his posts by throwing antelope and ibex into that same one, which I thought was really cool. And then, like, small creatures like skunks, bats, weasels, otters, beavers.
Mustelines.
Mustelines. So, and then each one of those clans, I gave a specific thing that they're mostly predominantly in. The canines are usually, like I said, the monks and religious leaders, mages. The felines are the technological minds. They're always thinking of that next step and taking any tech that was left on Kohana, or New Kohana, excuse me, that from Rex, we had a plot where some Yamataian ships crashed on Kohana, and I've been kind of silently working with that tech, as well as one of my other characters from a long time ago, Lenwe, who's an elf, has been working with, has been doing, like, black market dealings with Yamatai and Neplazlia to get weapons and armor. But that kind of fell through when I tried to get together with the Lorath.
And the other two clans?
The equines are mostly the warriors. They actually head up the Kohanian War Academy. And then the mustelines and small critters are the spies, assassins, and information gatherers.
I gotcha. Well, being that the Kohanians are directed at a different sort of player than sort of the rest of the site, because they're, you know, so low tech and they have magic, whereas on the rest of the site, their things are very high tech and it's the more science fiction, futury stuff. Do you see Kohanians as something more that either players will branch out into from playing other things on the site, you know, looking for doing something different, or as something you can bring players into that wouldn't necessarily be interested in the higher tech stuff? Like, where do you sort of see the Kohanians in relationship to the rest of the site?
I would like to see them as something that can be branched into or branched out of. For example, my character on the Cirrus is a Kohanian who went and was trained by the Neplazlian military and is now security for the Cirrus station. I also just kind of wanted to give Star Army a little bit of a fantasy setting as well, so that it can be marketed to both the sci-fi community and the fantasy community, which I believe are two of the, if not the two biggest
Well, they're
genres.
very, very broad genres, so.
Right. So I was hoping that's what I was working for when I was creating the Kohanians. I wasn't thinking, oh, well, I want to take over this sci-fi site with fantasy. I was hoping that by adding fantasy elements to it, and as the Kohanians are, and then maybe slowly building them up, we could take some of the fantasy RPers who are out there and sort of give them that segue into a high-tech sci-fi community.
All right. Well, the buzzword that everyone's been waiting for this entire show is furries. And so my next question is going to be the biggest one for you. And I talked to you about it before a little bit on IRC back when I first joined the site. And the big question is why not make them less, hey, these are Earth animals, and have them be more alienish instead of saying like, this is a fox. Why not describe them as if someone had never seen a fox before? Give them more alien features so they aren't just, this is this earth animal.
I actually have had that mentioned to me a couple of times that it would be a whole lot more easy and fun to play the Kohanians if they weren't furries. That's the main thing that everyone says. If it wasn't a furry, I'd play it. And it upsets me a lot because of the narrow-minded thing of it. Well, if it's a humanoid animal, it's a furry.
Well, that's the definition, yes.
Yeah, I can see that as being true, as like you said, that's the definition. But at the same time, there are other definitions for it, other ways of.
But what's the thing stopping you from doing that? From change, it's not even changing it because they're the same thing. It's just in the way that they're described, so that you leave that stigma behind.
Right. And then it's mostly due to my own laziness and perfectionism, I'll say. I've sat down and tried to do and just describe it without actually saying, this is a fox. I describe it, and it always comes out that that is how it comes out. Oh, well, that's obviously a fox. And so I believe it was Kai started saying, well, why not make them more alien? Give them things that are not part of a fox and describe those and just leave the rest of it to the person's imagination. And what I fear with that is that person A will think of it one way, and person B will think of it a completely different way. And it leads to just this, in my mind, this mishmash of things that no one knows what anyone else looks like
But
because.
isn't that what you were saying earlier as being something that was positive and that you like is when people bring these different ideas to the table? I mean, and then not to mention even what you've mentioned before with describing the different clans is that it's not just, one type of animal, it's, a series or a group of animals that are similar, but I mean that all look very different. I mean, a bison or a water buffalo looks different than an elk or an antelope or whatever.
Right, but what I'm saying is that by saying, okay, this clan includes canines. Okay, well, you know the basic things of what a canine looks like. But if I don't describe it that way, which is what was told to me, that these are not canines and felines and mustelids and things like that, and just say this is what they look like, and just kind of give very vague, basic things and leave people to.
But you don't have to give vague and basic. You could describe a canine without saying the word canine or saying it looks like a dog. I mean, you could look on a in an encyclopedia article or on Wikipedia or something and find very good definitions or descriptions of what these beasts look like and look through, what are the similar words that they used? How did they describe, a wolf versus a coyote versus a house dog? What are the similarities there? These are the same similarities that I'm going to use to describe when I write my article about this clan.
Right, and I understand. What I'm saying, though, is if I say this clan has elongated fangs, do you think short fangs, you know, like vampire fangs, or do you think saber-tooth?
Well, why not just say, oh, they're about 2 to 3 centimeters long? Or, I mean, why not be more specific?
My main thinking is, like I said, that people will. If I say, well, they're 2 to 3 centimeters long, well, what if the person is very small? Then that doesn't count anymore.
Yes, but you can write those things and say, you know, if someone joins and they're like, well, you know, you said that they're this long, but I want, is it okay if my character has some that are a little longer? And then you can say sure, or you can say no. I mean, that's part of what your privilege is as the FM, is that you get to make that decision.
Well, basically, what it was is at the beginning, I was creating a race to just give general ideas and try to get people to do it on their own. What I didn't realize was the whole 4chan community of if it's that way, then, you know, that's how it is. I was looking for the kind of what you're talking about of just giving general information of, you know, like tooth length and things like that, and ear shapes and things like that. But like I said, I've been lazy with it because it's always been on the bubble. The Kohanians have always been on the bubble of they should be gone, but they can stay because I put in so much time. And I see it as, well, if no one's interested, then why should I further it?
But if no one's going to be interested if you don't put that time in.
And I'm
So
realizing that.
you're just stuck in this vicious circle. I mean, the Aromaquane, another, new race, the Azorians, they're just described. I mean, they're not, they didn't start with pictures or whatever. X-Hack eventually drew some drawings, and then other people have taken those descriptions and drawings and drawn, we've got, I'd say people have a fairly good idea of what Aromaquane look like now, but I mean there's still things like joint plates still look kind of different from depending on who's drawing it and how much you can see. Things like the horn ear sort of area look quite different depending on who's drawing it. In fact, the first drawings that I did of it looked a whole lot different once X-Hack was like, here, this is kind of, my sketch of what I think they look like. And I was like, oh, well, that's completely different. And so I was like, well, okay, I'll change the way, mine look because, he's the FM. He knows what they look like. I was kind of misunderstanding some of the information. But I mean, it's, people do have different ideas, but, that's, like you said before, that's what helps create, this interesting, differing, society.
Right, yeah. And really, Kai has been helping me move forward with it quite a bit of, you know, because we're trying to move it away from just being swords and plate mail and stuff like that. So he's been helping me with that type of thing.
Well, okay, well then talking more about that sort of, the low tech in the high tech universe, have you done a lot of advertising outside the site to grab people in who are interested in that kind of stuff?
I have tried, yeah, but the main
You
thing
don't
that,
sound very confident there.
well, I've had numerous people that I RP'd with before Star Army and during the beginning times RPing with that I've advertised to, and actually they say it's too high tech, people are too stuck in their ways, so they don't want to join. And I've been facing that a lot with the fantasy community that, you know, they come in and they look at the long tech submissions and they look at the very strict way that characters have to be created according to ABC. And then there's just too much information for them to go through. They said that if they would have joined, it's what I like to call the EverQuest syndrome. If they would have joined when it first came out, well, then yeah, it'd be great because there was a little bit of information and then they just slowly build on it. But they're so far behind the curve right now that And then with, like I said, people so stuck in their ways that this is how things have to be done that they're just not interested.
I see. Well, here's a question that I've been kind of interested in, and just give it to me straight. What is the max number of Kalanian players you've had at one time on the site?
Three, including myself.
Three, including yourself. That's pretty small.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing that you've managed to keep them all afloat, let's say, unlike some of the other races who are no longer with us.
Yeah, I, as a lot of people like Tyler and Wes and Yang Fan will tell you, I'm pretty pit bull stubborn when it comes to my race. And Wes especially can tell you, I've left a number of times and said, nobody touch these. These are off limits. And then I'll come back 2 weeks later and be like, okay, I'm gonna try it again. Here we go. And even though, right now the only players who are currently playing them are Scott and missing. Basically, it's just, I know one of these days I'm gonna.
So you're saying if one other person joins the Kalanians right now, you'll have hit a new max.
I will have hit a new max if I get one more character.
All right, listeners, you've heard James. Just one of you has to create a new Kalanian character, and you will be a very special person.
Yes, you will have set the new record.
All right, so moving forward, what do you see as the future of the Kalanians? Like, where are we going from this point on?
Well, from right now, like I said, Kai is helping me to move things forward. We're shooting for, by the end of summer, I'm hoping to have in place a system to bring the Kohanians up to steampunk. Whether or not that comes about is, I haven't talked to Kai a whole lot about how fast we're moving through this and things, but
This
with.
is the last month of summer, you realize.
Yep, I do.
Okay. All right.
I have some things in place we're working on, like I said, but there are some other things that are out there on the horizon that I need to make sure it's viable to say that that will be available by the end of summer.
All right.
And then past that, it all depends on how many players I can get. If we can get a bunch of players part-time, it'd be better if I could get some full-time players, some tech people, maybe an artist or two. Then, I mean, of course, I know that that's what every plot says, but if I could get a few more players who could contribute and really help me with the stuff we've been talking about today, and then some of my ideas, sky's the limit right now. I'd really like to see it go. I mean, I'm not going to jump up to Yamatai and up Wesleyan Tech by, the end of the year, but slowly moving it forward, because I really want to do character development or race development through character and storytelling. But
Well, it's good luck to you, James.
yeah.
I wish you luck. Hope Sarpcast is helping you get the word out, and I hope you get a few more players.
I hope so too.
All right, moving on. It's time for our weekly segment, Pimp Your Plot. And what plot have you picked for us to this week, James?
A Horizon's Key.
Horizon's Key. Well, this is a plot that is one of the reasons that I like grabbing people to talk with outside of the group of people I normally roleplay with, is because there are plots that I don't read and don't have a whole lot of visibility on, and Horizon's Key is one of those. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, the Horizon's Key is a ship, and I was much more prepared for this until my internet decided to totally get rid of all of the windows that I had opened up for it. But it is a cargo runner ship that is made up of a very small crew at this point. I believe Missing is looking for more players as well, so if you want to kind of go out there independent and not really knowing the security of your future, I would definitely recommend the Horizon's Key. It is currently single post, but Missing is starting to do JPs on Sundays to try to help the problem with a lot of the people not knowing where the other people are. It's kind of currently in this current story, they're on Kohana, doing a solving the mystery of why the supplies are no longer going to the station that is in orbit over the planet. And they're about to run across my elf character, Lenway, who has self-appointed himself the godfather of Kohana and is running a fighting coliseum and casino.
I hope you're not giving us too much away, in terms of the plot, but
Nope.
it definitely sounds interesting. So it's you got kind of a mystery thing going on, and there's a lot of investigation type stuff going on then. What type of characters are you guys looking for in the Horizon Ski right now?
Mostly just about everything. Bridge crew probably would be top. They're looking for some security people and cargo specialists. I know Cypher is currently the only cargo specialist they have on this cargo runner ship.
What does a cargo specialist do exactly?
Loading and unloading, making sure that things are strapped down, loaded correctly, and then working with like the manifests and things. So
I would say something very sarcastic like, that sounds very interesting. But then again, I play a communications operative on the Senbu, which is the same type of thing where it's like, if you talk about it, people would go, why is that interesting? All you do is route calls. And it's like, well,
Well,
this is the kind
also,
of plot that makes it interesting. And if the Horizon's Key is something that makes being a cargo specialist interesting, then that's great.
yeah, and Cypher's doing a really good job with that because he's the mix of, Noplesley, and I'm always carrying a gun, but he's also this guy who's checking in and out the freight off of the ship. And so it's really, he's doing a really good job with it.
That sounds very interesting. I'll have to give it a read. Moving on, we've got our second segment, our second weekly segment, which is Post of the Week. James, what have you chosen this week for your Post of the Week?
I have chosen a post that I, when I first came across it, I was kind of like, it's not really that interesting. But then after reading it and the responses it has gotten, I gave it another full read over, full attention. And I really like Luca's post on the three RPG game archetypes and how they apply to our characters. And basically, he's just talking about that in all or in most RPGs, be they freeform, pen and paper, computer, or MMOs, the following three archetypes are transplantable between all games and even genres. And then he lists off the fighter, the mage, and the thief. And then within those, he gives two examples of the fighter can either be the strong fighter who deal the damage, or the tough fighter who outlasts their enemies, the smart mage who takes down their foes with smarts, or the understanding mage that is more geared for supporting the party, and then the charming thief who charms the pants off of people, or the deft thief who strikes from the shadows and gets the drop on his foes. And then at the end, he puts what his characters are of those. And I just thought that that was a really interesting way of looking at your characters. Sometimes where you're just going, okay, well, I'm making it for this plot, has these skills, this is what he looks like. Okay, ready, set, go.
One thing that that post really reminded me of, because it does seem those three archetypes and then the sub archetypes seems kind of limited, but what it really reminded me of is this article written by what was his name? Richard Bartle. And it was called Players Who Suit MUDs. And the article was originally written about MUDs, obviously, but I think it applies to other games as well. And in fact, I have a friend who teaches at DeVry University, who mentioned, ever since I showed him the article, he mentions it to his one of his o opening classes in the game design curriculum. And it basically splits up players into four suits, like cards, hearts, clubs, diamonds, and spades. And it's about being a killer, where your goal is to kill either, players or mobs or, you know, what you're playing the game for is you're playing the game to kill other things. Then there are achievers, which your goal in the game is to achieve something, either to go out and find something that other people haven't found, or to be the top, you know, something in the game, or and receive notoriety based on that. Then you have the socializers, which are people who are playing to interact with other people. You know, you're more involved in the community aspect. And then finally, there are the explorers who are interacting with not with the people, but with the world itself. They're going out and they're seeing what different things, you know, look like. They're out there seeing what's out there to be experienced. And that it's a really good good article, and the guy who wrote it's named Richard Bartle. So I would suggest any listeners listening to this to go out and read it. And it talks about different archetypes of players interacting with other. With other players.
Well, sounds good.
For my post of the week, though, my post of the week is from the RFMD-02B Bulldog thread, which is Cyber's mass driver weapon for the aggressor. And really, it's not one post in it, though there is one post in it that made me say, all right, this is why I should mention it in post of the week. But it's the whole thread is really good in showing how tech approval threads should go. You know, Wes was like, you know, deferred to Doshi and was like, hey, you know, check this out. You know, this is kind of your, you know, this is your specialization, you know, see what you have to say. And he came in and gave his advice, and that's the post that actually, you know, caught my eye. Because he was really helpful. He helped out, and there was some constructive conversation, and, you know, the thing ended up approved, and that's really the kind of thing that I really wish all of our tech approval threads were more like that one. Coming up in second place, the post I almost mentioned was also in the tech approval forum was Kai's post in helping Uso on why, you know, what worked and what didn't work on his truck thing that I'm trying to remember what it was called. But I mean, there's a difference in coming into a thread and saying, no, this won't work, and these are all the reasons why it won't work. And it's another thing to say, you know, to come in, do that, and then say, but this is how it will work, or this is what you should change. And, you know, we're seeing more and more of that in the NTSC, and that's what the direction that that we really should be moving as a site. And so that's why that post gets my my post of the week choice.
Nice.
All right. Well, it's our time is breaking. This has actually been our longest SARPcast so far. So congratulations on breaking another record right there.
All right. Woo! Go me!
Well, that's it for SARPcast Episode 4. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again in a week when we'll have the man behind the site, the king, that's right, Wes, Mr. Man himself, and he'll be telling us how, in detail, Mishu toilets work and give tips on the care and feeding of your Kohanian fur coat. Have fun, everyone. Please send us any topic you'd like to see us cover, and please remember to vote for SARP once a day, every day.